Prologue. 3 years before the kiss, the last box was taped. It was a small box, holding nothing of value. A chipped coffee mug, a handful of paperbacks with cracked spines, a faded photograph of a dog she'd had as a child. The things that had belonged only to her. The things that had survived. Savannah Reed stood in the center of the empty living room, the silence a stark contrast to the noise that had filled this space for 2 years. Caleb's voice, a velvet hammer, had a way of occupying every corner, every silence, until there was no room left for her own thoughts. Now the quiet was so profound it felt like a physical presence. It was the sound of her own breathing. She ran a hand over the faint indentation in the carpet where his favorite armchair used to be. The place from which he had held court, dispensing his opinions, his criticisms, his love, all of it, a form of ownership. He had called his jealousy protection. He had called his demands devotion. She had called it love, until the day she realized she was disappearing, being slowly and methodically erased. The key was on the kitchen counter, a small silver sliver of metal that represented both a prison and an escape. She had practiced this moment in her mind 1,000 times. The clean break, the finality, but her hands still trembled as she picked it up. Her phone buzzed on the counter, a frantic, insistent vibration. Caleb. Of course. He would be calling now, the anger giving way to pleading, the pleading to promises. He would promise to change. He would promise her the world. But she knew now that his world was a cage, no matter how beautifully gilded. She looked at the phone, at his name glowing on the screen. For a single, terrifying moment, she felt the old pull, the familiar undertow of his charisma. It would be so easy to answer, so easy to fall back into the story he had written for them. Instead, she took a deep, shuddering breath, the air tasting of dust and freedom. She turned the phone over, silencing the screen, silencing him. She walked to the door, her footsteps echoing in the empty apartment. She did not look back. She placed the key on the counter, a final, quiet act of rebellion. Then she walked out, closing the door softly behind her, not with a slam of anger, but with the quiet resolve of a survivor. As she stood on the sidewalk, the late afternoon sun warm on her face, she made a promise to the woman she hoped to become. A vow whispered into the open air, never again. The applause was a physical force, a wave of heat and noise that washed over the stage. But Daniel Cross felt none of it. He stood in the wings of the amphitheater in Nashville, the roar of 10,000 people a distant, meaningless hum. The air was thick with the cloying scent of fog machine smoke and stale beer. His guitar, usually a familiar weight, an extension of his own body, felt like a prop in someone else's show. Miles Hargrove, his manager, clapped him on the back, his hand landing with a proprietary thud. "They love you, kid. They're eating out of your hand." Miles's eyes were alight with the cold fire of commerce, his smile a perfectly calibrated instrument of persuasion. Daniel nodded, the movement feeling disconnected from his own body. He had just played a set of songs that had once been torn from his soul, songs about heartbreak and longing and the search for something real. Now, they felt like products, carefully packaged and sold to a crowd that consumed them like candy. "We need to talk about the new single," Miles said, his voice a low, conspiratorial buzz. "The label loves Empty Road, but they think the bridge needs to be punchier. More marketable heartbreak. We need a hook that screams add to playlist."
Marketable heartbreak. The phrase landed in Daniel's gut like a stone. He looked out at the sea of faces, at the phones held aloft.